Thank you. Thank you. Wow. Thank you very much. Rita, you need to go over there. Hey, thank you very much. You know, if I were you, I'd be asking, who is this guy and why is he here? I want to talk to you a little bit about that. I don't take anything for granted anymore. I was at an airport recently, and a lady came up and said, "We just love your TV show. You've meant so much to me and my family. I just can't tell you what big fans we are and so forth. Would you stop and say hello to my husband and everything?" I said, "Well, certainly, I'd be glad to." We went over and said, "Honey, you'll never believe it. Dr. Phil." So I don't take anything for granted anymore. Let me tell you a little bit about myself. This is my first trip back to Iowa in a good while. I've been here several times over the years for political folks and political functions. I'm going to get to see my buddy Chuck Grassley again here in a little bit, and I'm loving that. He's going to show me around the fairgrounds. I'm hoping he knows his way around here. Do you reckon he does all right? I think he probably does. But I grew up in a little country town in Middle Tennessee. My folks came off the farm at an early age, and my daddy set up a used car lot along the main drag there in Lawrenceburg, and he sold cars there for about 40 years to the same people. My folks didn't have much formal education at all, but they valued it very highly, and they saw that I was able to get mine, and us together working and barring our way through, I got to get through school and law school and every once in a while participate in some things that were important to our nation's history. I got to be an assistant United States attorney, prosecuted everything from moonshiners to bank robbers. My old granddaddy wondered why I was persecuting those independent businessmen in the hills of Tennessee, but I squared that with him, and it was the best 3 years that I ever spent in professional life, I guess. Went from there, Howard Baker asked me to come up and be the counsel on the Watergate Committee. I did that when I was 30 years old. I came back, started my law practice back. A young woman came in one day and said, "You may have heard of me. I'm chairman of the parole board, and I always said if I ever needed a lawyer, I'd come to you. And I'm working for a governor, and I've got some real problems with what I think is going on. He's about to fire me, not because I'm not doing my job, but because I am. And I won't approve some of these pardons and paroles that they won't approve." Sure enough, he did fire her. We sued the governor. We got a jury trial. We won our lawsuit. One thing led to another. Come to find out, the governor and others were involved in a lot of corruption. And one of the things that was happening was the selling of pardons and paroles right out of the Capitol building there in Tennessee. He went to jail. The folks came to town. They made a movie about it. All came to me and said, "You want to play yourself in the movie?" Well, I figured they couldn't tell me I was doing it wrong. But they did on more than one occasion. But while I was practicing law there in Nashville, I'd go out and as avocation, make a movie once or twice a year, never having had an acting lesson or been in a high school play. You know, oftentimes my friends say, "You don't need to mention that acting lesson part. It's obvious from watching you." Then I read where Al Gore was going to be the next vice president. And there was an open Senate seat in Tennessee. Brought back a lot of memories for me. Brought me back to my kitchen table there in Lawrenceburg, listening to my daddy and my mama talk about politics. Brought me back to college when I read Conscience of a Conservative. Idolized Barry Goldwater. And it brought home to me the fact that it was time for me to put up or shut up about the things I've been complaining about and the things that I'd learned at the feet of Howard Baker and Sam Ervin and all those other former Senate greats. So I left the law practice and I left the entertainment stuff and all of that and ran for the United States Senate. And I was able to, on two different occasions, on that election and my re-election, I won by 20 points both times in a state that Bill Clinton carried twice. I didn't do that by just getting all Republican votes, and I didn't do that by compromising my conservative principles. we served there during a time when we balanced the budget, and we cut taxes, we made Congress live under the laws that everybody else lives under. We reformed welfare, something we've been working on for decades in this country, and we started to rebuild our national defense. But I had put term limits on myself because I kind of fashioned myself a citizen politician, and for other reasons. But I left the Senate and went back to the private world. And I've been able to do a TV show some of you might have seen, and I was able to fill in for one of my heroes, Paul Harvey, on the radio on occasion. That's kind of like pinch hitting for Babe Ruth, by the way. And to keep involved in my nation's future, I served on the China Commission because China has been a special subject and special concern of mine, long range for some time. Condoleezza Rice asked me to head up an international security advisory board for the State Department. And a lot of distinguished Americans on that, and we dealt with all kinds of various issues. But the most important thing that happened in my life, that I learned that my wife and I were going to be parents. I now have a little girl that's almost 4 years old, and a little boy that's about 10 months old. It was a surprise to me. Not something that I had planned, but I knew from the instant that I heard the news that I was going to be blessed in a way that I'd never been before. And that's part of the reason why I'm here today. I have formed a committee to test the waters. I have thought about the kind of world and the kind of country that these kids and your kids and our grandkids are going to grow up in, and I've been talking to the American people about my concerns and listening to the American people. I think the American people are going to give us a shot. I think they're going to open the door and open their hearts and their minds to what we have to say and to who we are. I've been around in and out of public service and private life for a long time now, and I hope that people kind of have a sense of the kind of fellow I am and the kinds of things that I would like to do. A lot of people say, well, it's late and all that. I look at my history books. I see where people announce September, October, November, and things like that. I know the rules of the game have changed by all the Washington Beltway pundits and all the politicians, but I wasn't there when they made those rules, so I'm not abiding by them. And we've got plenty of time. But that's all process stuff. Here's the important stuff. I'm concerned that if we continue the same direction that we're going in this country, we're going to wind up weaker and less prosperous and more divided than when we found this country. We're going to reverse the historical process if we're not careful. Our ancestors all the way down kept leaving a better country than they found. We cannot be the first country that reversed that process and left it worse off than the country we found when we were born into it. Now, as to why I'm here, there are a lot of issues we could talk about. Goodness knows we're not bereft of issues to talk about. But I think of three things that, to me, kind of underlie everything else. First one has to do with national security, something that's been something that I've worked with and on and in the Intelligence Committee in the Senate and since then for a long time. And I'll simply say this at this point. I don't think that our nation has yet, as a nation, come to terms with the nature of the threat that's facing us in the global war against radical Islamic fundamentalism. In terms of the time it's going to take, in terms of the money and the resources from our treasury it's going to take, in terms of rebuilding our military, which is stretched way too thin, replacing our equipment, and all the things it's going to take, I don't think we've come to terms with that yet as a nation. We haven't had the discussion that we need to have about the fact that Iraq is a part of this problem. It's not the whole problem. And we're dealing with folks that want to bring us to our knees and bring Western civilization to our knees, and we have to be stronger and tougher and more united than they are, the way Americans have been all throughout our history. The second thing I think of has to do with our economy. It underlies everything else. To make a long story short, we are in the process of gradually bankrupting future generations in this country. Now, I'm not the first one to say this. I may be the first politician who wants to talk about it, because everybody asks, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And people are afraid of it. But it's an absolute fact. You look at the government reports, the General Accountability Office put out another one earlier this year. The Treasury Department has sent up warning signals with regard to Medicare and what's happening and so forth. We are clearly, and everybody in Washington knows this, going to be facing, with the retirement of the baby boomers just right around the corner and the rising medical costs, we're going to be facing a sea of red ink and government deficits and government debts is going to ruin this economy and not only jeopardize our entitlement programs, but it's going to jeopardize the future of the next generation. The third thing, when we look to Washington, these are Washington problems. Now, I'm a Federalist. I believe that the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and all of the amendments, including the Second Amendment, including the Tenth Amendment, are just as applicable today as that they've ever been. But there are certain things that are responsibility of the federal government. When I look to Washington, I see a Congress that's more bitterly divided, more acrimonious, more prone to fight over everything, large and small, that has all their energy directed inward toward each other and toward the White House, and totally out of touch with the American people. I think, if nothing else proves it, the immigration bill and the fact that they were surprised at the reaction they got proved it more than anything else. And speaking of that, when you look at governmental functions, we see for the first time in our history this clearly, that the government can't any longer do some basic things that the government is supposed to do. We're seeing problems. Everybody knows about problems with Katrina, and everybody knows about procurement issues with regard to Iraq and all of that. Tip of the iceberg, my friends. We've got a bunch of folks are in over their head in some key positions. We've got computers that won't talk to each other. We've got departments that can't pass an audit. And all of this now is coming home to roost and affecting our national security. Now, as you might guess, if you know anything about my record, my answer to these things is not big government solutions and more bureaucracy and higher taxes. It's just the opposite. We need to get back to first principles. The declaration that I mentioned, the fact that our main laws come from God and not from any kind of government. Our Constitution, which has got the separation of powers and checks and balances and federalist system of government, for one reason mainly, and that is to ensure the freedom of the American people. We need to treasure that, remember that, rely upon that, and the underlying institutions. Such as respect for private property, respect for market economy, along with individual rights, a respect for the value of free and fair competition, not only among our people, but with other nations in the world. Those are the kinds of things that we're talking about. I am unabashedly pro-life. I am pro-Second Amendment. And I don't apologize for the United States of America. This country has shed more blood for the freedom of other people than all the other nations in the history of the world combined, and I'm tired of people feeling like they've got to apologize for America. If things play out the way I've got in mind, we'll be seeing a lot more of each other. Now, I don't know whether that makes you happy or not, but it sure makes me happy, and I'm looking forward to it. Keep your powder dry. I think we can do something good for America. Thank you very much.